What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everybody.
And we have some special guests today. We have Mark Delaney from GameSpot. I almost said stop. My bad.
I do that too.
All the time. Hey. And then we have, is it Stedman?
Yes, Stedman.
Awesome. Awesome. I know what it's like when people don't get your name right, your last name. Yep. It's just all the time. I'm Stuart. That's not my name, folks. It's just not my name. But we have Alex from IGN. Usually in this segment, we talk about films or games that we played to kind of recommend to folks. But before we do that, instead of doing that, we're going to let Mark and Alex kind of, you know, give a little spiel of what they've done and how they've gotten into this, you know, the career that they're in right now. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I'm a lady, whatever.
There you go.
Yeah. So as you said, I work at IGN. So right now I am a news editor at IGN. I oversee our entertainment reporting. But that is a very recent development. Before I was doing that, I was overseeing our film and TV reviews, which is how we got to know each other, Kenneth.
Yep.
But before that, I was actually at Variety Magazine. And basically how I got started there was I had gone to college at Columbia College Chicago. One of my professors worked at Variety, long story short. He kind of pulled me over there and I spent 8 years there. And I've been at IGN for about like a year and a half. And like I said, mostly overseeing film and TV reviews. But as of recently, I'm taking over entertainment reporting and it's been really fun.
Awesome. Awesome. And you, Mark?
Yeah. So I was mostly freelancing for years and years. I edited like in an editor role at some smaller sites a couple of years, many years ago now. I forget how long it's been. But I would say my career sort of picked up like a year before the pandemic. I was kind of getting in with some bigger sites at that time. And then in 2021, I started to cover Fortnite exclusively for GameSpot. So 7 months later, when they had like a guides editor role open up, I applied for that and got it. So I've been there about a year and a half now. It's been excellent.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. So I actually got the privilege of working with you both, being that I'm still freelancing and whatnot, and it's been great. If anybody, if you're looking to do guides, or well, actually you're not doing the thing that we were doing before.
We still need news freelancers, you know. Hey,
there you go. Yes, definitely two awesome people to work with, and I'm glad to have you here. Initially, we were trying to meet before, but some things happen. Life happens, as you well know. Even with us trying to do video now, usually we don't for various reasons, but we're trying to branch out a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So with that, we want to start the show and talk about a couple of things. The big topic, though, being The Last of Us and it being a video game adaptation that's really good, like across the board. I think everyone, except for like a select few, don't think, you know, everybody thinks it's good or whatever. And we wanted to talk about adaptations. But I didn't want to just talk about video game adaptations. I want to talk about adaptations all around and what would make a good adaptation, whether it's a book to a film to a game, even, you know, like what would make them work and in a lot of cases not work that we've seen over the years. For instance, for me, a good adaptation is something that where the director or whoever takes the source material and they make it their own, because going from like a game to, you know, film or TV, there's unique aspects that you have to kind of consider. Games are gamey in that sense. Like, you know, if you do Resident Evil, having someone locked in a mansion with a bunch of puzzles doesn't really translate well to a film. But, you know, something where, you know, like for instance, with the actual Resident Evil film, where there's a rogue AI that's tripping everybody up and not letting them leave a facility, that makes a little bit more sense. So, for me, it's not so much the fan service, it's more so writing a good story first and then adding all that extra stuff, you know, later. But for you guys, what do you think makes a good adaptation, regardless of, you know, if it's coming from a book or a game or a film and vice versa?
I think the one that comes to mind, it's fairly recent, Station 11. It was on there we go. I guess it's some applause. I wasn't sure. It felt like nobody watched it, so I'm glad to see.
I also felt like that, so thank you for bringing it up. I love Station 11.
It's my favorite book, so I thought it would you know, I had an idea that it would translate pretty well, but I think it even exceeded my expectations. And based on what I see on Twitter, I kind of owe that to the way that the director, the showrunner, and the original author, Emily St. John Mandel, I forget the showrunner's name, Patrick Somerville, I think, they seem to have collaborated very closely together. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm of the book translates pretty well. They collaborated together pretty closely. From what I can tell, they seem like best friends even today. I think they're doing more adaptations of her novels, which is cool because she's my favorite author living, at least. they did change some things, and I won't spoil anything, but one of the things they changed I actually thought was for the better. And it was a kind of a big deal, I thought, at least in terms of what I liked about the book. We can maybe talk off air about what that was, but I don't think there's a formula to it. Maybe it kind of, each context demands its own things. And in that case, it was just like a perfect storm of great source material, willing to change it, and working closely with like the original vision holder, I guess.
Yeah. And I will say, like, you know, kind of agreeing with you a bit, like, I totally like respect people who like, you know, have a lot of like loyalty to the source material, and they kind of like hate it when an adaptation makes changes. I'm not one of those people. Like, even if I love something, like, I'm going to watch Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix with an open mind, the live action thing. Like, you know, like, and I love the animated series, but like, my example of where that could have been done better is I was having a debate about like House of the Dragon with someone, and I was talking about how I was annoyed with all the time jumps and how I felt like I didn't have any time to get to know anyone. In every episode, there were 15 new children and 2 new Aegons, and like, and they were like, well, that's how it was in the book. And I'm like, no, but like, you don't have to like, first of all, I don't think it was. And second of all, like, you don't have to follow every single thing that your source material does. You should evolve the source material for the medium. And I think, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but I actually think that's something that The Last of Us has done really well, because a lot of people said, like, you know, you can just adapt it one-to-one and it's still going to be a good TV show. And I think, like, maybe that's, I don't think it would, maybe it would be a passable TV show. I don't think it would be as great as it is because of the risks it's taken. But, like, I think with any adaptation, like, not only should you make changes, but, like you have to adapt to the medium.
Agreed. I agree 100%. Definitely. That's what we talked about when we discussed Alice in Borderland in regards to adaptation. The medium is film, the media is, or what type of film? Like, for example, doing something in animation versus doing something in live action. You can't, everything doesn't translate. And so it's very important for you to, for the director, the creative team, to realize the medium that you're using and understand how to adapt the story so that the medium can shine. Otherwise, you're kind of not really doing any work. We're doing anti-work.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you're not doing any writing, at least.
Right. Exactly. Definitely. Like, somebody else did it for you.
And then there's also, I think, looking at what is there in the source material and what can be changed for the better outside of it being a different medium. Like, for instance, I really like the film The Warriors, old film. And I saw the film before I knew it was a book and what the story was, you know, was based on and everything. And I went back and checked out the book. And oh my. The characters are not likable in that book. They are horrible human beings. And a lot of what's depicted in the book is borderline racist or just straight racist. It's just, it's bad on multiple levels. And that's not to say that these guys were saints or anything like that. It was, you know, they're a gang. They're part of a gang. And they're trying to make it back to Coney Island after a big gang meeting kind of goes left and they get blamed for it. And so they're running from rival gangs as well as the police, and they get into some, you know, some trouble. But at the end of the day, being that you're looking at things from their perspective, they're supposed to not necessarily be the good guys, but be someone you can root for as they make it across the city. And in the book, they're horrible, horrible people. So much so that I was taken aback by how much the film had changed the book. And it was all for the better. Like, I would have not have liked it if it was like straight from the book. Just horrible, horrible people. And so, like, that's something to kind of think about, because maybe in the book it works in a sense where your imagination takes over and you can kind of fill in some of the gaps, you know, in terms of your personality with this particular character, but actually watching them do something that's more or less despicable, it's like, no, I can't root for this person. And then it's a whole movie based on these people. Like, no, that's not going to work, you know? And so that for me was a good adaptation that was better than the source material. And I think that's what's kind of happening for The Last of Us, but for different reasons, right? And then there's also the flip side, right? We have films that come out, they're really great. And then we have a game. We have games that come from them. And those have been not so good as well. And I wonder what kind of trips up, you know, the development process in that regard, because if anything, you're like, just take some action sequences and sprinkle in some gamified things and hopefully it'll be okay. But a lot of them aren't at all. You know, so like, what do you guys think about that? Like the going from the reverse.
I think THQ would tell you that it's not a good idea to adapt movies straight to video games. It's a big part of why they kind of don't exist anymore. I know THQ Nordic's a thing, but that's sort of like a resurrected zombie that's using the name, not really the same thing. And I think in the case of games, as was often the case, and weirdly might be the case again soon with what DC's planning, the problem was that the games were on the movie schedule. And we know that games are notoriously difficult to develop, especially on like a strict time schedule. So like if the movie's coming out on June 20th, your game's got to come out on, you know, June 10th or June 15th or something like that. It can't really go past that. So it always seemed like these games were either, you know, they were constrained by the time always if it was like a, you know, movie adaptation game. And then that either meant that their vision wasn't that interesting because they knew they had such a limitation there, or, you know, it got canceled or it got delayed or it came out broken. I almost have a fondness for that era, but I'm sure it's just, you know, nostalgia. And if I played those games, they're probably pretty terrible. I remember the only, if you even want to qualify it as a good one, was, I love the Mad Max game. But it wasn't really an adaptation in that way anymore. Apparently it started that way. It was just going to come out like alongside Fury Road. And they just realized at some point that wasn't going to be tenable. So they kind of went their own direction. It didn't, you know, it doesn't star Tom Hardy or Charlize Theron. And it kind of just became its own little thing that just happened to come out at a similar moment in time. But
right.
So it kind of like survived and ended up being pretty awesome, I think, just because it was like allowed to like exist and breathe on its own in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you're totally right about, like, you know, games already having a lot of delays or, you know, not having a lot of time and then they're on the movie schedule. But I also want to say, like, I think this kind of like connection, like very close creative connection between games and entertainment and film and TV is something that's like relatively new in the grand scheme of things. Like, not that there weren't always video game adaptations, but we're now living in a world where most like film and TV arms have a gaming arm and vice versa. A lot of big gaming arms have a film and TV arm and they're working more closely together. So I think that makes a huge difference. And I feel like, you know, even though, like, I don't think gaming has as much, like, it hasn't had a stigma in a long time, but Hollywood kind of has, like, stuck up its nose a little bit at it. And I think that's going away.
Agreed.
Yeah, they make too much money for it.
Yeah, they make too much money.
That makes no sense. Go ahead.
Oh, I remembered I brought up DC. I wanted to speak to that because I don't know if you saw, but when, who's the big guy James in Gunn. Charge now? Yeah, him. I don't like those movies, so I always forget his name. But James Gunn, he announced
James Gunn movies.
Well, I don't really like
podcasts.
Yeah, it's another show, but we can. I'll get myself in trouble with that one another day. But apparently, what he said was like the actors portraying these characters in the movies and in the shows and even in the games are going to be the same. Mm-hmm. Which sounds really ambitious and even probably really cool if you like that sort of thing. But I don't know. I think they're about to realize why people stopped doing that 10 years ago and why like THQ doesn't exist anymore. Cause I mean, THQ was doing crappy like kids games and they had that weird like coloring tablet right before they died. So I think that was probably a problem too. But I think a big part of THQ's downfall was like this reliance on like straight to or like movie adaptation games and, you know, kids properties, family properties. Like if you lump all that together, that was pretty troublesome for them. And now DC's like promising in their relaunch of all things that that's how they're going to do it this time. It's like, well, you already screwed it up once. Now you're coming back and promising the world with the relaunch. It's like, do you get a third shot? I guess you do because you're DC Comics, but it's going to be a weird like couple of years for them, I think.
I also feel like the video game thing, because I did read that too as well. And I feel like the video game thing was like one of the ways they were trying to set themselves apart from the MCU. Because like one of the big narratives around this has been like, oh, like DC needed their Kevin Feige and now James Gunn is it. And now they're just trying to do the MCU thing. But it's like, well, MCU doesn't have games and it's like cinematic universe. So screw you. Like that's what I kind of got from it too. But I think you're right. I think maybe they're underestimating just how ambitious that is. I think if they're able, like I'm personally pretty hopeful, not to go on a whole tangent, I'm personally pretty hopeful about the new DCU. I know they've had a million reboots, but if they could pull it off and include games in their big cinematic universe, it would be cool. That said, it's going to be very difficult and require a lot of skill from the executives. So we'll see.
What that actually reminds me of the, if you remember the MMO Defiance, and how it had the sci-fi channel show that went with it. And I was so enamored by the possibility of this thing happening where you play the game and then something happened in the show that affects the game. And I think it happened all of in like one expansion. And then after that, they just divert because it was just too difficult. It was too difficult, especially going the opposite where if enough people did a certain thing, it would affect the show. And I'm like, how? And so that's kind of where this, the DC thing reminds me of, like, is that going to be the same thing? Like, how does that work? Or is it going to be like a Telltale's Game type of thing where it's very minimal, you know, the, in scope. And so it's not going to really rub or, you know, interfere with the film and TV stuff as much. You know, it's just like, I guess like the Netflix shows, how they'd be like, you know, the big green guy. They don't say the Hulk, but they're like the big green guy over there. Is it going to be one of those things? They make a cameo. So I'm curious, and at the same time, I don't want so much connectivity with all of these things at the same time. And I'm saying this as a huge Marvel fan. I am so ready for so much Marvel stuff. And at the same time, I'm still like, I got to watch what and when and where? Like, No, I wanted to
talk about that too, because you run into the danger if you are integrating games in your like cinematic universe, like not all of your audience is going to play all these games, just like all of the audience isn't watching all every single dang MCU Disney Plus show because there's so many. Yeah. Like you have to like be really careful about making each thing its standalone own thing while also weaving it into this big cinematic universe and the story you're telling there, which is not easy.
Yeah.
At all. I know, Tess, like you have, because we talked extensively about, you know, whether it's the Game of Thrones or, you know, Lord of the Rings being adapted, like the Prime show, mm-hmm. and how things didn't go the way we thought they would go.
We knew, and I say we collectively as a human body. I mean, everyone not involved with the show knew it was going to be trash. Rings of Power. So, yeah.
I defend Rings of Power.
No!
You
no!
are a Rings of Power defender on the podcast. I will defend it with my life.
That is actually awesome because we haven't run into anybody who actually liked it. And if we did, I murdered them. they don't.
This
they're
is,
dead.
This is our Galadriel and Halbrand. Yes.
It's alleged. Awesome. Alleged murders. Alleged.
Alleged murders in the building. Yes. So that, and again, Game of Thrones. Yeah. I definitely had issues with the adaptations, and I will say it differently for both shows because they were adapted differently. But I feel like Rings of Power didn't really have any plan. It was just like, and make a show. And what's it called again? Game of Thrones?
House of the Dragon?
House of the Dragon. There was plan there. There was a lot of plan that again, I don't necessarily think it was successful, but a lot of other people do. I think one of the successful things was that it came out at the same time as Rings of Power, and a lot of people didn't like Rings of Power, and so they were like, oh my god, this new Game of Thrones show is amazing. And I was like, okay, but did you guys read the book? Because, like, but I feel like there kind of is a formula sometimes when it comes to adaptation, and I feel like some of the most successful things are it's not about necessarily staying true to the source material, unless your source material was just like so flawless. And like there's things that can be said in Tolkien's writings where Tolkien may have maybe like errors in his writings, like things that are contradictory or whatnot. However, he put so much effort into creating this universe, this legendarium, that I'm not saying that the adaptation is easy, because some people say he's a tedious writer. And so to make something that is very true to what he, you know, does in his books is a difficult thing. However, the idea is really bringing the sentiment and bringing the thematic story, which is really what he was doing. I mean, this is a person who went to war and returned from war and actually created characters that had a lot to do with his experience in war. Like Thranduil is really the ultimate PTSD survivor. And and it doesn't get talked about enough, though. Like, people be like, oh, that asshole dude who was mean to Legolas. Whatever, Legolas is stupid. Like, no, I'm just saying, like, there are elements to making a really good adaptation that, you know, could be followed and could be seen as formula, but one of the bigger things is just making sure that you are thematically in line with your source material. Even if you call out maybe some of the things that are problematic, that's okay, but you are at least still utilizing source material, and so that people understand, people know that this is what you're doing, and then you're relaying it in a way through the proper medium and making something interesting that people want to see. It's a problem when you have characters who are supposed to go on a specific arc, you know, the hero's journey, the hero, the anti-hero, the protagonist, the antagonist, things like that. And then you completely dismantle them and have them travel some different direction that you're, you know, you as a director, creative team are choosing. And it doesn't fall in line with anything. And you're like, well, is this an adaptation, or are you just using somebody's IP so that you can create a show and you've got lots of money to do it? And so that was one of the issues that we obviously had with Rings of Power. Or maybe it was just me, because did you even watch it, Kenny? Like,
no, I was warned by you and some other people not to watch.
Give it another chance.
No, I'm saying
give it some time.
And it was, you know, it's difficult because, well, for one, there's so many things, and this was,
yeah, a lot,
even with me, and this was, you know, working under Alex and covering different shows and everything. So there'll be times where I want to watch something and then I'm like, oh, I need to, this is coming out, I need to check this out. And what would happen is, in the midst of that, while I'm covering something else, people are talking about the show, whatever the show is. And I'll get a vibe of what is happening, and I'm like, you know what? I don't need to watch that right now. It's okay. I'll come back to that. You know what I mean? And so it might be great. I don't know. I know that certain aspects would push me away, and you know, you explained some of them. But like when we were talking about the Cowboy Bebop adaptation, mm-hmm. and how they totally changed certain characters in a way that it's just very interesting how they changed them to the point of like. Like, they're not, like, this is supposed to be a bad guy, and I get it, and he's still a bad guy, but you've changed his character so much that he's not likable. And I don't mean likable as in I'm rooting for him, but not likable as in this is a foreign character in this film now, or in this show, or whatever. And it just ruins it for the most part. Yeah, it's thematically, it's not recognizable, right? Mm-hmm. Beyond that, though, what do you think are some good adaptations? And this is kind of tricky when it comes to video games, because not everyone agree, and there's a lot of bad ones. But what are some good, for instance, and I know a lot of people might not feel this way, but I really liked the first Mortal Kombat adaptation, not the new one, because it felt like a smart way of producing the game or reproducing the game outside of not having any gore and stuff like that, but in a way that was inviting to people who weren't into the game. and able to, because Mortal Kombat is very confusing with the realms and everything. But being able to have a character like Johnny Cage who can kind of walk you through not knowing what's happening, and also having a decent like 80s film plot. And I was like, this is fun. This isn't, you know, especially as a kid, this is fun and goofy, but it works for Mortal Kombat. Right. And so for me, that was a good adaptation because they didn't, obviously they didn't take everything from the game. You know, they're not testing their might and whatnot. And it worked because of that, you know, whereas I think the newer version, and we've spoken about it at length, but like it is so bent on trying to produce what the game is in certain aspects that just basic storytelling start to fall apart, certain character arcs fall apart. And then from there, all you get is, well, you know, Kano was dope. That's what you get. The fatalities were awesome. And you know what I mean? And so what are some good adaptations for you guys?
I am a big Detective Pikachu defender. Cause like I get really defensive about it when someone says like, oh my gosh, Sonic broke the video game curse or The Last of Us did. It's like, no, like Detective Pikachu was actually super charming. And like, and that's also because I like am, Pokemon is like one of the things that is like nearest and dearest to me. I'll play every game always. I love Pokemon, getting a Pokemon tattoo. And like, I've always like kind of wanted to see that in live action. And I was really apprehensive going into it because like I said earlier, I'm not super precious when it comes to adaptations. Like I always have an open mind when there's an idea of like more of the thing I love coming. Right. And but like with Pokemon, I hold it so near and dear to my heart. And I absolutely love how they adapted it. I thought the way they adapted the Pokemon was adorable. And it wasn't just the Pokemon. I thought the very like human story at the center of it was done very well. And like, yes, it's a kid's movie. There's going to be like some stupid jokes and like, but like, I thought that was charming. And I find it charming about the Sonic movies too. As far as like other good adaptations that I've really liked, I actually, this is a hot take as well. Kind of almost in the same vein as Rings of Power. I actually enjoyed The Wheel of Time at Amazon. I know. I knew it always gets that reaction.
I heard like nothing about that. I didn't even know it came out yet.
Oh, my God. It came out like a year and a half ago.
Oh, my God.
So here's the thing.
I gotta take the glasses off. I'm going to.
It always gets that reaction. But like
a light.
So I read the Wheel of Time books, and to me, like, because I'm a big fantasy person, and I actually like, there are certain things about those books that I don't think are good. Like I still read them and enjoy them, but it's like the character of like Matt Cawthorn, for example, he is such, I don't know if we can swear on here, but he's a little jerk. He's a little shit in the books. And the show like kind of like justified that and gave him more of a backstory. And it was a bit of, you know, it was a bit of a change. But it made the end result the same while also making him likable. And it made a lot of, like, kind of like what you were saying earlier, Kenneth, about like changing characters from the book to make them mm-hmm. not such little jerks. Like, I felt like mm-hmm. it made so many of the characters likable. And like Game of Thrones until the end, when it wasn't adapting anything, was a great adaptation.
Yeah.
And then it went off the rails because it wasn't adapting anything.
That's true.
And I'm just going to piggyback off of that because, I mean, Kenny and I have discussed this before. Kenny didn't watch, you didn't watch House of Dragon yet. And again, first of all, I still think they really messed up with the title. It didn't need to be House of the Dragon. It should have just been House of Dragons or the Targaryen dynasty. Of
There's a lot of dragons people. In it. Yeah.
Lots
yeah.
of dragons. Like just the dragon. I mean, anyway, but and I say this and I may get stabbed for this. Again, D&D were really good when they had, you know, direct source material. I think that D&D would have done really well with House of the Dragon. I agree with that. Amazing. All of the source material is there. There's nothing that isn't. I think they would have done really, really well. Because there were so many things. I watched that show and I was disappointed. But wait, I mean, I was really, really, really enamored by some of the actors that they chose. I was like, oh my goodness, I literally am in love with Emma Darcy. I clearly know that they are taken, but still doesn't mean that I'm not in love with Emma Darcy. I just am. It's just honest. But no, they had amazing actors. And then, but I agree with you, the time skips make absolutely no sense. You don't get enough time to love the characters. And They didn't hire any black people for the wigs for the black people. Clear. I mean, I don't even know if that's factual, but I just know that the wigs were trash. So
they were. Like, how do you have
this many black Targaryens or whatever, black Valyrians, and you didn't get no people to do the wigs right? So anyway, but yeah, those two guys. I mean, they are shunned from the industry, but I think they could have given us a better show.
I mean, I feel like HBO would have took them if they wanted to come back. Because they've got a big old fat Netflix deal now. Yeah. But I think they're just like... And by the way, I think they could have done Game of Thrones a little bit better at the end if they had actually spent time on it. But it's very clear that they were rushing out of there to get to their Star Wars trilogy. That didn't happen because they rushed the end of Game of Thrones. But that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
I was looking at video game adaptations. I wanted to try to find one that isn't The Last of Us that was good. Mm. And I've got a list here of the movies and the shows just to refresh my memory. And it's really slim pickings here. I mean,
I didn't say any. I don't know any.
Yeah, I mean, the only one, man, I mean, Silent Hill to me is still not very good. But there was a couple fan servicey things, probably even too many to the point where it was detrimental, but at least they used the music. That was important. The music of that series is really important, and they basically just scored the whole thing. I'm not even sure if they used any original music. They just ripped it right out of the game, scene after scene. That was really good, but the sequel was horrendous. I remember that. That's all I remember about the movie, was that it was so bad. But I mean, yeah, like Assassin's Creed, Prince of Persia. Oh my God, I just remember they made a Prince of Persia. Uncharted. I didn't see Uncharted, but I got to assume that was what it looked like, which was totally
It was
forgettable.
Pretty dumb. It was like fun sometimes, pretty dumb.
Yeah. And so, I remember...
go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, like, even with Uncharted, it's like they just try to, like, buzz our brains in that right way, where it's like, oh, look, he's falling out of the back of the cargo plane. Don't you remember playing that? It's like, I do, but like, this looks exactly like that because Naughty Dog games already play like movies. So what else do you have for me? Like, I don't know. It's just, that's why The Last of Us works so well, I think, is because I listen to like the official podcast, and they, you know, Neil and Craig and Troy Baker host it. They often talk about like, when we're going to change something, they stop and consider, is it better than the game? And if it's not, then they just basically stick with the game. So, and it's worked out really well because, you know, we're only 5 weeks in. I won't spoil anything for people who are maybe not watching yet, but like, there's a couple, you know, small things they've changed. And then there's some scenes that are verbatim, which are interesting in their own right. But then, you know, there's two specific things that I'm thinking of that they went off on a totally different tangent, and they work really well. And a lot of like these crappy movies and shows, man, like, well, yeah, some of the kids ones are good. I'm looking at Cuphead here. I hear, you know, the Sonic's okay. But yeah, I think this podcast was born out of a Twitter conversation, actually, in which yes. Alex and I were like, not arguing over it, but yeah. We had different opinions. And
I'm going to call it myself for when I was listening to my great adaptations. I did the thing that I hate that everyone does and forgot animation. Like, they're, I think the best video game adaptations, and I would say a freaking masterpiece, is Arcane. Like, I think that is straight up 10 out of 10. Masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And like, you can argue if that's like an adaptation or not, because it's really not adapting a straightforward story. It's kind of taking the world of League of Legends and adapting it into a story. But like, I have never played a game of League of Legends in my life, and Arcane was my favorite TV show of that year. You mentioned the Cuphead show, Mark. I thought that was really delightful. Like, it's not a masterpiece, but I thought it was cute. Cyberpunk Edgerunners, I think, did a very similar thing that Arcane did and didn't adapt a straightforward story, but told a different story in that world. And I think did it like arguably better than the game. Like, I felt more connected to Night City watching the anime than I did playing the game. And then like Castlevania, like there are so many like animated video game adaptations that are just so good that I always get like very defensive when someone says like video game curse. I'm like, watch Arcane. Like,
yeah, no, Arcane is amazing. We loved we How many, did we do two shows on our, we, I don't,
we did
we
multiple
even,
shows on Arcane. Yeah.
Multiple shows, and our deep dive wasn't even, we didn't even get, because we only had an hour. Like, we need three, we need 4 hours to go deep, deep, deep into Arcane.
I do think, and you kind of stole my point. And
I know I interrupted you because I was mad at myself, but go ahead.
No, that's fine. But I came here armed with that point, and then you kind of like already brushed it under the rug pretty effectively. So maybe, but which is like,
invite
you know,
me on all your podcasts.
there is a caveat there, I think. Mm-hmm. When we talk about like The Last of Us breaking the supposed curse, and then people will point to, well, what about Arcane? What about Edgerunners, Castlevania? And I don't think it's an animation problem. I mean, we can make that distinction as well, that Last of Us is arguably the best live action one, maybe the first good live action, if you count Sonic and Detective Pikachu as like mixed, I guess, because mm-hmm. they're kind of CG blended. So Last of Us, you know, it does earn that distinction in my opinion. But also, yeah, like you said, Arcane and those, they're kind of taking just the worlds of those games. And, you know, if we're speaking of the curse, I feel like no one's ever saying, like, no one would argue, I think, that video games don't have, like, awesome worlds and lore and, like, all that story mm-hmm. foundational stuff. So when Arcane and Edgerunners builds on top of those, that it's not easy, but it's a different assignment, I think, than adapting something like The Last of Us, which, you know, itself has kind of a head start because it's already so cinematic, and you know, maybe that's a point against it as well. But yeah. It's just, when I think the video game curse, if you want to, you know, not literal curse, of course, but to the extent that we think that there haven't been any good adaptations, I do think The Last of Us is the first of its kind that it's not just fully live action, which is new for a good one, but it's also... like I said, it's taking the story and it's transposing that story into a new medium, using a pretty, I mean, I've seen the whole thing because I reviewed it for GameSpot. It's excellent throughout. and it's because of the way it like blends what was there before and what it adds. And I don't know. I just, like I said, there's already a story there that it's adapting and it does that really well. And I can't point to any others that have done that. Maybe Sonic, I guess, is that's technically like the story of the Sonic games in those movies.
It takes a lot of liberty.
I think granted, this is not what I'm going to explain, but because this is a very nuanced conversation that we're having. But I do recognize that, especially online, everything is either amazing or trash. There's no middle ground. And over my time, like, because I came from mostly writing about games, and then I started doing film and TV a few years ago, and I've noticed that there's a lot of gray area that we miss. And so for me, there'll be times where in talking about this, I'm like, well, there's plenty of good films, but how good? How bad?
Right.
And, you know, there's a range. Because there's a lot of films that I like or I enjoy that I don't think are necessarily good, but I think they're good enough, because if they weren't about a video game, I think people would be okay with them. I think that putting the video game there is a stigma, and that creates this, you know, this, I don't want to say, it's like a prerequisite to be amazing. Like it has to make me feel exactly the way I felt when I played the video game. And that's not really possible. I think The Last of Us came kind of close in certain moments, but even as a show, there are parts where I'm like, no, this was so much better when I experienced it in the game versus the show. And so for me, I think the conversation becomes more broad when you look at, oh, you know what? This action film is actually like those other action films. It just has video game characters. It's actually not that bad if you like action films. Same thing with some of the horror stuff. For instance, Silent Hill 2 for me was so horrible because it stuck so much to the game. And the game doesn't make a lot of sense. It just doesn't. But I remember like playing Silent Hill 2 and then looking at and watching the film. And I'm like, oh no, this is almost scene for scene in certain cases. Like, wow. And I don't like it. Like I like the video game. You know what I mean? And so, and then, you know, vice versa. So there are times where like, for instance, Street Fighter, the original Street Fighter, horrible movie, just really, really bad. But I really enjoy it. as a kid watching, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and granted, yeah. I found this out later that he was mad high and drunk while he was doing this, doing, you know, flash kicks was amazing to me. I didn't care if it wasn't the cinematic masterpiece. I'm like, he's kicking this dude who's flying. Like, this is what are we talking about? So like, I think for me, I'm a little bit more, the bias is not the right word, but I'm a little bit more, I'm less critical on certain things when it comes to video game adaptations, mainly because there's a lot more pressure there than I think other things. The same thing with anything that's like nerd based, right? If you are adapting a book, if it's not like the book, then it's explosions. But then something else that's just like it will be perfectly fine because there's no source material, you know? Mm-hmm. At least that's what I've seen on Twitter, which is, yeah.
That's because nerds won the internet and now it's, right. You know, they're really loud when this stuff comes up. I say they as if I'm not, you know, I'm likely a loud nerd myself in some situations, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, nope. There's nothing to compare it to sometimes. Like if you have something, for example, you're playing the game Battleship. We grew up playing Battleship. We all love Battleship. It was fun. And then you watch the movie and you're like, but why though? I mean, yes, because you put amazing people in it. I mean, I was like, turn the volume down and I'll just keep watching. You know, but otherwise, why?
Yes. And don't we have a Tetris movie coming out? I think
it's about the making of Tetris. So I wouldn't consider that like a video game adaptation. Okay. It's like literally but it would be really funny to just watch like 90 minutes of live action bricks.
That's amazing.
I mean, if they were falling from the sky and you had to dodge them, that'd be a totally different.
That's a
premise.
Japanese game show. That's a real show. There's like, it's called like Human Tetris.
Wow. I think it's also an Adam Sandler movie, except it was Pac-Man. What was that one he did?
Did he?
Yes.
He did like some video game movie.
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. Like Click? It wasn't Click. No, no, it was. No, I know what you're talking about.
Pixels.
Pixel. Yeah.
Pixel.
Yeah.
Yes, and that was
they
fun
had some licensed characters
in an Adam Sandler type of way. Fun. if I don't know if anyone's a fan, I'm like, but yeah, it was Adam fun. Sandler. It was fun. So then, my last question for everyone is pertaining to the Last of Us show: is this a hard-fought standard, or is this an easy win? And I only say that because obviously this isn't easy. Doing a show like this is not easy. Especially with so many fans and expectations and all that. But this isn't Mario. Granted, I'm looking forward to Mario. This isn't Mario. This isn't Resident Evil. This isn't a lot of the trickier films or IP to translate into live action. Because a lot of it is, I mean, they Naughty Dog kind of leans into that. Like they want to be a spectacle in that regard, right? And so a show like this kind of makes sense. You know, an Uncharted, even though I guess it didn't turn out well, an Uncharted makes sense. Do you think this is something that it worked because The Last of Us is seemingly a little bit easier to adapt? Or do you think it's, for whatever other reason, just hard work and we made it work finally?
I think there's one secret ingredient here. Let me say first, I do agree that yes, it's obviously very difficult to make anything, especially at this scale where millions of people are watching it each week and many of them will be judgmental if you screw up even a little, but, having gotten that out of the way, The Last of Us is on HBO and to me, like you've probably seen it in my tweets. I'm an HBO fanboy, like to the way that some people defend MCU or whatever their big thing is. Like, I think if you made a list of like the 10 best dramas ever, like 8 of them are probably from HBO. I think everything they do is excellent. And that's sort of waned recently because it seems like their new like executives kind of want to be Netflix, even though Netflix started out wanting to be HBO. So it's like, you could just stay, but that's again another show. But but like I think that's a secret ingredient here because like I love zombie and post-apocalyptic stuff. And you look at like The Walking Dead, you know, it was drawn out. They did a lot just for ratings and to keep the show going. And in that whole time, not only were they drawing the show out, but they were slashing budget. Or you know, if it was staying the same, it was just never really high to begin with. And then so you see a lot of Walking Dead episodes just take place in the woods, or, you know, I won't spoil anything. I'm very sensitive to that, so I'm trying to tiptoe around these tonight. But like a lot of that story kind of takes place in one location after a certain point. And yeah. It's like you can see where AMC like pinched pennies, and HBO does not do that, at least not for like its premiere stuff. And I know HBO Max stuff hasn't been as much of a like sure thing lately as like the HBO of old used to be, but they've given this show, The Last of Us, the full like HBO treatment. And like, you can see like these sets that they bring to life just to destroy them 40 minutes later. And the characters are onto the next one. It's like, you got to have the money for that, or else it's going to look really janky and really goofy. And I don't think The Last of Us has slipped in like the visual regard at all. Right. I don't know. Just to me, like, yeah, The Last of Us makes it easy because obviously Naughty Dog was already taking so much from TV and movies when it came out a decade ago. So now it kind of like just gets to flip and go back to where it was. But also, I do think like HBO just kind of makes the best stuff.
No, I agree with Mark, and we'll talk when Succession comes back because I'm very excited. But like, I think it's kind of like a perfect storm with The Last of Us, right? So I think on one hand, I think I said earlier, like, could you make a one-to-one adaptation of The Last of Us where you don't change a gosh dang thing and just put it onto a TV show? And like, yeah, like you could probably make a pretty like okay show that way. The reason that I think The Last of Us has kind of like transcended that is because one of the talent behind it, again, to what you were speaking to, Mark, they have the budget, they have that HBO money, and they have really talented writers. I love Craig Mazin. I love what he did with Chernobyl. They have like Barry Gower doing the prosthetics, and he's the master. They have like fantastic actors. They have Pedro Pascal. I mean, come on. And I think what pushes it above when it comes, when we're talking like adaptations, is they make really smart changes when it comes to shifting from one medium to the other. So the example that I always use, or at least always have been using since this show started airing, is the very first episode, they spend so much more time with Sarah. And I think they had to do that because, I mean, if you look at it, like, and I did, like, I crunched the numbers and everything. In the game, you spend 15 minutes with Sarah. In the show, you spend 34 minutes with Sarah. And I think that had to be done because in the game, you're like in her shoes. So you're kind of already connected to her. You're playing as her. You're doing things as her. And a TV show has to do a little bit more to get you a little bit more invested. It has to like kind of put you in her shoes in a different way and show her like going about like day-to-day mundanities and stuff like that. And I think like they made the opening even more heartbreaking, if that's possible, with what they did in the TV show. And I think that's just kind of like the genius of what they've been doing with this adaptation in particular. Like, yes, they're staying true to the story for the most part because it's a really good story, but they're not afraid to like make a whole entire episode about like two dudes who you didn't really know much about in the game because they recognize the potential of this world that they've built. Yeah. And that's why I think like, you know, we could not just video game adaptations, but I think anyone adapting anything could learn a lot from The Last of Us.
Agreed. I think this is a HBO thing, kind of to go with what you were saying, Mark. The creative people at HBO, the people who do HBO shows, have this tendency to make their episodes like little movies. And each episode, even though obviously we're in a series, each episode has its own like containment, and it feels like the story, there is another story told every episode, and it feels very whole. I don't feel like I'm missing something. I don't really know the best way to explain it, but I feel like I'm watching something that's very complete. And I think that one of the best ways to adapt a video game is to make sure that the story is relatable. Obviously, in this type of story with The Last of Us, this is a post-apocalyptic type world, which is something that could possibly happen. The idea is to get people to say, hey, this could be our future if blah, blah, blah. And when you make stuff happen in a manner in which it touches people, or where they can see themselves as the characters, and the world created is realistic, the world in each episode, all of the containment each episode's like, I'm just going to throw out the tampons, you know, These are important.
I yelled when I saw the tampons. I was like, they never address that in apocalyptic shows, except for Yellow Jackets. Like, they never address it.
It's like, what, is there endless amounts of birth control? Are women just not having their periods anymore? Like, what's going on? And so the where you succeed in these types of things is making them realistic. Kenny, we talked about this when we were discussing Alice in Borderland, about things that are realistic. If you are going to make a show that is based in realism, even though the happening is maybe not realistic, because that's why it's a film, you know, like, hey, right now we don't think that there's any type of, you know, cordyceps fungi that could do this, but if the elements are correct, this is what could happen. And then making every element of each show or each episode realistic to the point where we are like, oh wow, you know. and that's where they're succeeding, and yeah, other people should probably take note of that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, to your point about it being realistic, like, even as someone who's played the games and knows every single thing that happens in this game, I'm like, oh my god, oh my god, what's gonna happen? I know what's gonna happen, but like, they've made me so invested in this world and these characters that I'm like, I'm gonna be freaking out no matter what.
The best shows are usually ones that like Breaking Bad did this well, Sopranos did this well. Like, you know, the main characters, you know, if their life is in jeopardy in episode four, like, it's just not going to happen that way, you know, like, they're not going to die when the show is about them and they have to get to a certain point. And of course, you know, we can point out things that subvert that. And again, I won't spoil anything here, but we probably all know the one, but I forget my point, but
that's me on a daily basis.
No, but I think there's a whole prequel conversation to be had about, like, stakes and, you know, do you care when you know someone's going to die? And I think, you know, I think certain shows have done that really poorly, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, which I liked a lot of. Like, they made a whole episode where it made it seem like Leia was going to die. I'm like, come on. Like, but, like, I think,
we know.
Yeah, we know. But, like, I think, you know, The Last of Us has done it really well, like, even if you have played the game. And by the way, most of the people I know who are loving The Last of Us didn't even play the game. Like, I was talking to one very not online friend the other day, and she was like, it's a game? And I was like, babe, it's like one of the, like, she's not very online. But, like, no, like, it's just a great show.
Like, I mean, playing scary stuff by myself, so that's why it was literally on my Xbox and I just wouldn't play it.
Yeah, fair enough. It is kind of scary to play.
I think, to your point of, like, knowing what's going to happen, and by the way, Obi-Wan, he pissed me off because I'm like, if you would just finish your food, we would not have all this chaos with Vader. Just you had him dead to rights twice. Like, where'd they do that at?
Finish the job, Obi.
Yes. But yeah, with The Last of Us, you know, with his daughter, that wrecked me. And I knew it was going to happen. And I think it was partially because we spend more time with her. And then also she reminds me of my daughters. And so, and this is something that kind of happened when I became a father. Certain media that I was like, whatever. Like, the kid dies. Okay, whatever. But like, now with horror films, and I love horror, there's certain parts like that where it affects me differently. And so with The Last of Us, when I was watching this, I was like, this is the part. And it happens. I'm like, yep, I had to stop. We're pausing and we're just going to sit here for a little bit. Because I'm watching on my phone, my kids are like, you know, you okay? I'm like, I'm good. Just give me a second. And so I think there is some power in that, but it also is in how you do it, because The Last of Us, even if you knew what was going to happen, they work you up in a way that you think it might not. You know what's going to happen, but you're like, it might not. Like, the way that this angle, she might make it. You know what I mean? Like, and then it still happens. And that's actually with The Walking Dead. There's a few instances like that too, because I've read all the comics, and there are portions where I'm like, oh, this person's supposed to die here, and then they don't, and I'm like, oh wow, okay, and it adds a new element there. And I think that The Last of Us is doing that in a way that doesn't take away from the source material, but they kind of fool you. Like, the show fools you into thinking that this person's going to survive, this person's going to be here later, and they don't. And I think that's great because, like you said, we kind of know who's going to survive because it's about them, right? It's their show. So if you kill the main character within the first episode, it's like, I guess we're done with the show. You know what I mean? So fooling the audience, that's a really good thing. And I think they've nailed that.
Funny. Yeah. That's what comedians say about jokes. I mean, so you know where the joke is going, but when it pull the rug out and then it's still funny.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm so glad you all just said that because that was my point that I forgot. You've all just basically made it for me. So just pretend I was in there more saying it.
No, but they like with Sarah, like they really main charactered her. I think even more than they did in the game. Like they, it's not quite like Ned Stark levels of killing off your main character, but like if you're not initiated, you're like, oh my God, they killed off the main character. Like if you don't already know what's going on, it's crazy.
Yeah. And cause there's certain cues that like for instance, if a character, especially in shows like The Walking Dead, if a character didn't have any lines and all of a sudden they have all the lines, it's like, oh, okay, he's dying. Like, this is what it is. I know it. That has not happened. That is not, at least the episodes I've seen of The Last of Us, that has not happened. And so, again, it's like, oh, right, they're supposed to die. Totally forgot that. All right. And you know what I mean? But you got me. You definitely got me, you know? So that's, it's awesome. I'm very excited for the show and more shows like it. I want more adaptations. I want more of, or not even just like adaptations from games and stuff like that, but just the worlds, kind of like with Arcane, where we can kind of get a different, there's so many things to talk about with Star Wars outside of Luke and anybody with any Jedi, honestly, just
Andor,
so much.
So good.
Right? There's so many things and we're just kind of limited to this small little whatever. And I think we would benefit a lot because then we get to live in these worlds in a different way, which is the whole point. Or at least I thought live action isn't just to see your heroes. It's like, oh, this is a new form or a new way of seeing them, a new light or whatever. But yeah, that is all our time. We're just over an hour. I want to shout out Mark and Alex for joining us. We had such a great time. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. I know you guys are busy because I'm busy.
I'm the only one who's not busy.
No, you're busy too. You're busy in a different way.
Busy
you're,
a different
you're just
way,
not writing.
You know.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm definitely not working.
But yes, if you're listening on or watching on YouTube, feel free to hit that subscribe button and notification bell. If you're listening on iTunes or Google Podcasts, definitely add us to your RSS feed so you know about all the new content. Our previous episode, we reviewed Moon Girl, which was awesome. We got a screener for that. Where hopefully we'll get some more screeners. We'll see. Definitely check out Mark over at GameSpot. Check out, almost said GameStop again.
I still do it. We all do it. Everybody I work with does it.
Yep. Check out Alex over at IGN. And yeah, just keep it locked here for all the nerd stuff from our point of view because we're awesome.
Yeah, pretty awesome. You guys are awesome. Thanks for joining us. Everybody, remember what I say every week. Same thing. Be kind. Don't be a dick. Wear your masks. And yeah, COVID's still a thing, people. Wash your hands. Wash your faces. And your butts. That's it from us. Bye-bye.